जय माँ। ऑलवेज वेन वी हैव टू स्पीक अबाउट शिरविंदो आई गेट ओवरवेल्म्ड। ही इज सो वास्ट, सो डीप, लिटरली वास्टर देन द कॉस्मॉस, डीपर देन द अटलांटिक। सो व्हाट डज वन स्पीक अबाउट हिम? सो वन ऑफ द वेज, देर आर सेवरल वेज ऑफ अप्रोचिंग शिरविंदो, दैट वन ऑफ द थिंग्स विच to me, I see in him something very amazing. Everything is very amazing, but one of them is that he is represents the much needed synthesis. So what is missing? He has brought many new things. So we are talking only of one thing. He represents, he brings to the earth, divided in different camps, the grand synthesis. So what kind of synthesis he brings? What were the camps? Before Sri Aurobindo's coming, the world was divided into a spiritual and material. The scientists said, this is ours, thanks to René Descartes. And the spiritually said, this is ours. So the scientist communally said, you continue. You meditate in the cave. They would laugh at the hallucination, God knows whatever he is having. And the spiritualist said, this is an illusion, this fellow scientist, he is caught up in an illusion, he is wasting his life. So both of them were happy in their own land. But Sri Aurobindo brings the synthesis, and it's interesting to see how it started. If you really look into the whole story, initial first part of the previous century, you will see that scientists declare spirituality is all. Anyways, it's a private matter. Those who were generous said it's a private matter. And those who were not so generous, he said they are all hallucinating and God knows what. They are smoking something. That's how, you know, Marxism came like that. That they are smoking opium. That's how he, Dalai Lama left, because he heard Marx say these words. Then he realized that behind all he's trying to do good is to destroy anything which is to do with divinity or higher ascension. That's the whole story. So, and the world was continuing. Okay, as long as they don't interfere with me, it's fine. Then Sri Aurobindo comes. And with Sri Aurobindo's advent, a new thing starts. New thing starts is that science discovered something. And suddenly they discovered that by this discovery, we are drawing closer to what is discovered by the spiritual people. They discovered that this world is a strange paradox, a kind of maya. Is it real? Is it unreal? You see, it's a big debate even today. Is it real? Is it unreal? Electrons, are they real? Are they unreal? Anyway, that's a different subject. We can take it up one day. But they started speaking things which were quite close to at least Indian spiritual thought. But not at all, you will not find it in the Abrahamic religious thought. Religious thought, not in the yogis. Again, I draw a distinction between, you know, let's say Islam and Muhammad, whatever it is, in Christianity and Christ. We should know the difference. So what they said, I would consider as a dualistic in our Dvaitavad. But what people made out of it is something different. So anyway, the understanding ultimately matters. So then what happened is that they started somehow meeting. And why they started meeting, it's very interesting. It didn't take place in the West so much, because the camps could not really come together. In the West, it took the form of religious inquisitions. Those who didn't believe had to be punished. And then a reaction to it, which actually ended up bringing a rational age of enlightenment. Very fascinating if you go into the details. In India, everything was cool. We believed everything is together. For everything we were praying, the polytheism, monotheism, everything was together because of so many varieties and endless. But then at some point, because of the modern thought, language, education, science, the debate started. So inter-faith dialogue changed into a coming together of the scientist and the yogi. This really, especially after 60s, the scientist started studying the yogi. This is a new phenomenon. See how Sri Aurobindo is operating from behind the scenes. And then they came to a point where now they do want to cut a long story short, that what is really the meeting point? And it's very interesting. The mother says, about the new creation that there is a third meeting point where science and spirituality meet. When you discover that point, you will have the secret of the new age. It's there in the writings. What is that meeting point? Very simply, it is truth. Both are in search of truth. But there are two kinds of truth. One, the truth that was given to us, which does not reconcile. The extreme spiritual truth, which declared the world as Maya, unreal, strange, aghatan, ghatan, patiyasi, something which should not have been, yet it is. And there is, but the truth which can create a grand reconciliatory synthesis. So Shobindo brings this truth before us that, well, all this that is the divine. The hints are there in the Vedas, iti iti, and not just neti neti. Not going into a detail, we'll be having all this in our live divine classes. It's going to start soon. But he brings a reconciliatory truth that matter is not cut off from the divine. In very simple words, Mother said something very interesting. In very simple words, he harmonized that one position is matter is ultimate, spiritual, all this is an epiphenomena. The other is spirituality is ultimate and matter is a kind of illusion. You can play with it, as you know, the great proponent of a kind of illusionist Advaita said. There is a vyavaric practical truth in it, but it ceases once you realize it. But Sri Aurobindo says that matter and physical life should become an instrument of the spirit. If you just remember this one sentence, it changes everything. So one does not discard matter. One does not discard physical things. So many teachings of the mother that, you know, when we deal with physical objects unconsciously, then there is an inconscience in us because of which we are not able to experience them as a divine presence. When we look at, you know, even now I think Sri Smriti has one of the little boxes of the mother. It's made of cardboard something, and there you have several match boxes which are there, and she used to keep things there and they are still functional. It's unimaginable. It's not just about, oh wow, it is so wonderful. It is wonderful, but it shows that with what consciousness she dealt with matter and material objects. And there is a prayer of the mother when she is leaving her place in Paris, and she speaks about, she prays and offers all the objects that this perhaps the last time we are going to deal with them, all these little objects which have served her, and she prays for them. So this is a new sense of spirituality. Often people say, yes, yes, material aspect have been included in today's spirituality. They make nice rooms. No, it's not about making nice rooms and very nice place. It's still not that. Because if you live in those nice rooms and have this attitude that worldly life is an illusion, you are still doing the same error. Over a period of time, you will end up in the same camp. It's not that which Sri Aurobindo is doing, saying that, you know, you make lot of places and matter also material. He is saying matter is instinct, or within matter is the spirit. So it's about consciously dealing with every material object. Extremely difficult. But one thing is there, that in at least this yoga, everybody must have experienced. I have experienced. It is described very beautifully by Nalnida that when the mother came, they used to live like a laissez-faire attitude, throw around things here, there, everywhere. First effect of mother's coming was they started keeping things decently. Now this is not just, it's not just a casual statement. One can experience it in real life in this yogic journey. I have seen it, I'm sure many others, that normally we, at least in India, we disregard it. It's okay, how does it matter? You can realize the divine anywhere, which is true, no doubt about it. But that divine is not reconciliatory to this world. And that's where, because divine has many aspects. So this is one realization, but this should be complemented with the other realization where every object is conscious. How she would deal with everything as if it is conscious. Not as if, it is conscious. Bird, tree, animals, objects. And that's why every object that the mother touched or handled is a relic in its own right. So this is the first kind of reconciliation between the spiritual and the material. To that extent, that she takes this reconciliation to the next level. So what is the next level? The next level is that between the body and the spirit is the extreme result. If matter is pregnant with spiritual life, then it's not just a deliverance from the material into the spiritual, but a transformation, a return of spiritual consciousness to transform matter. So the whole logic of transformation of bodily existence, whatever time it takes, is precisely this, that because matter is within, is instinct, or let's put it, spirit is within matter, it must be released, and not only released, it must transform it. That's what the story we were also reading partly about Nal Kuber. This gives a new meaning. There is a spirit which is condemned in a material form. It is released and experience his own potential, but of course transformation is not there. So here it is, the material body itself must undergo a transformation under the growing pressure of a spiritual consciousness, which means this spirituality is not about withdrawing into trance for long periods. One can do it, this experience may come spontaneously, but about impacting the material life, material consciousness while being in the body. It's not about going out of the body. Well, experiences will come. Again, we are not talking about that. But ultimately, the sadhana has to be done in the body, because the body has to be transformed. So this is the other reconciliation which completely makes sense of this world and all that has been happening here. Otherwise you wonder that why the body, why such a creation, why this has been created. First time Sri Aurobindo says that body too has a destiny, and the destiny is that it must realize its own divinity. So a divine body, divine life in a divine body. Up till divine mind we can still understand possibly. The mind can be uplifted. Vedic rishis speak about the mind being uplifted to the highest heights. And at the over mind, you can literally say it's a divine mind, almost, sort of. Sahasraksh, it can, the consciousness becomes global. But not life and physical body. People often ask, what is the difference? This is the difference. Vedic yogas speak about ascent. And they start the ascent with the mind, and it goes right. It can, in some rare rishis, it has gone very high on the borders of the supermind. Almost when Yajnavalk says, Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasyapihitam Mukham Tattvam Bhushanna Pavranu Satya Dharmaya Drishte. He says, I can see beyond, but take off the lid, show me the law of truth. But here it's not only the mind. The mind begins to get some kind of a glimpse, or even a kind of preliminary, not transformation, but suffused by the rays of the sun. Not heart, not life, not at all the body. And that's a big difference. So this is one part. Then the second thing we should Shobindo reconcile, and that way we can reconcile God in the world. So till now this world is only a preparation for afterlife. Other life. So in other life we can have heaven, paradise, swargalok, Vaikuntha lok, or in a chinmay day enjoy in Sri Krishna's lok, the eternal Vrindavan, or Kailash, those who are devotees of Shiva, or ultimately go beyond all this into nirvana, mukti. This is the thing. World is a preparation for the afterlife. So there is the idea of evolution even in Vedanta, through the different forms. But this idea of evolution is ultimately to project into the that which is beyond all description. But that's not a reconciliation. But here Sri Aurobindo speaks of the return of God into the world and transformation of this worldly life into the life divine. That's what he writes to the mother when she has gone to Japan from Pondicherry, her journey. She says, heavens we have conquered, but not yet the earth. Gives a new meaning to the story of Vamana Avatar. Heavens we have conquered, but not yet the earth. So earth also has to be conquered. So if earth can be conquered, it changes all perspective. In fact, she goes on to say, even the gods will find it beautiful to take birth upon earth. They would vie for it. Why? Because each god has his own world, beautiful though it is. But integrality is here. Only there are two spaces where we have integrality. One is in the Supreme Divine, or the Divine in whom all these truths are held, as Sri Krishna speaks of Samagram Mam. or in matter, because the entire divinity is encased here. Nowhere else you find the integrality. The heavens, like you see, you know, Vaikunth has all the Vaishnavas and Vishnu Bhagwan, and that Leela goes on. In Kailash, he has Gana of Shiva, and that's a different world. And then, of course, you have Brahmalok with its own denizens, Suryalok with its own denizens. But the entire integrality is possible only upon earth. In matter, it is. And it is releasing itself. All of us know that, so we need not go into it. But to realize that integral truth here, so that that divine who is right there can manifest through material existence. This is the third unique thing about Sri Aurobindo. Many unique things, but we are just touching upon the synthesis aspect. And then, very interestingly about this yoga, people often, when they compare, contrast human mind, difference between this yoga and all other, they speak about processes and this. More importantly, it is a collective yoga. Nowhere else you have collective yoga. So people say, no, no, sir, we have sanghas, we have, you know, like in Sikhism also we have, and there are communities which are formed. No, we have to understand the difference. Ashram is also a community. The mother said it's not yet a Gnostic collectivity. Community is a different thing. Community is not collective yoga. One may live in a community and yet practice individual yoga. One may live in a, that's how one of the things people often ask, that what is the difference between Sri Aurobindo ashram, and they compare outwardly. And I have been to places, and people have been to places where they are very well organized, you know. They don't use the word ashram, they use different words, and their ashrams also nicely organized, which is very good. It should be well organized. But the point is, the goal is very different. Because here it's by nature, and the mother speaks about it in a talk of 57. She says, before 57, all of you were little individuals. So each one was put under a cocoon. Each one progressed or did not progress depending upon that person's sincerity. She says, after 57, she has brought them together. So everything changes. We are no more in a cocoon. Now we are in a big cocoon. All of us are together. And as an aside, I say, we are all together. We can either fight or we can collaborate. This is the choice. Depending on how you look at it. When you are in a cocoon, then they know. You see, if you read ashram of the olden times, give an example of Nalnida and Amrita, they lived next to each other. Even now you can see their rooms. So Nalnida's room is, you know, as soon as you enter, then there is a little partition. Beyond that is Nalnida's room. But as soon as you enter the place where mother's last darshan is there, the first room is Amrita's room. They were next to each other. Opposite personalities outwardly. But they will go out together, but they are both progressing as individuals. And now, because of the interconnectedness, the whole is being lifted up. And that's why the mother said many people did not understand it, could not understand it. Even when I had come, they said, oh, those days. I said, yes, but consciousness advances further. Now it's a collective yoga by default. Then she went one step further. This also we must understand, because some people still live in that, oh, this is ashram, like a closed community. Well, there is a truth behind that. Then there is Auroville, there is society, there are others. But the mother herself said that ashram has been, now there is an inner ashram. She hinted that. But in her conversation, she brings it to the forefront. She says there is deliberately, all those who have turned to the teaching of the mother, of Sri Aurobindo, she uses the word Sri Aurobindo, we can say Sri Aurobindo and the mother, they are now tied together in a collectivity. So she speaks about the inner ashram. And so it is extending everywhere. And mother speaks of that also. You may be in France, you may be in Lagrasse Center, in you know, wherever you may be. Yet you are in Greenville. Okay, not Greenville exactly, but close to Greenville. So you can be anywhere in the world. But now there is another collectivity which has, mother has joined. And there is a reason why she has joined it. It may look that the yoga has become more difficult. It has, because, you know, people are, even within this larger community, when you meet, you're compelled, many things are together and consciousness has grown together. So certain things become more difficult. But she says the whole is rising up. So this is that's why Shobindo, other day we had read, he says that there are two kinds of effort. One is of individual progress and the individual beings who can communicate this truth to the masses. And then the second is where the masses get lifted up. And that is the reason why supramental consciousness takes time to manifest. It is bound to take time, maybe a couple of centuries. And the reason is very simple, that it is not just individuals arriving at supramental realization, like moksha. Moksha, yes, an individual may realize moksha. He may realize jivan mukti. Very much doable, possible, done. But if you have to have a collective evolution, it cannot be suddenly one supramental being. History of evolution tells us that it is a species which evolves. There have to be pockets, nucleus, islets, call it whatever, of beings engaged in the supramental yoga. They will do it in their own way, right, wrong, don't worry about it. That's the Divine Mother is looking into it. And slowly, slowly you will see at a point of time different places where there will be an emergence. That is exactly how humanity evolved. So this is a different yoga. It's not like individually, some people say, oh, I experienced my body growing gold and all this. Fine, keep it to. But it's about not individually. Individual transformation, Mother says, even if it were possible, it is not what is being done. To start with, it is not possible. This will solve the mystery of Shobindo's physical withdrawal, Mother's physical withdrawal. Because individual transformation disconnected from the rest. That's not how a new species is created. So it is a collective yoga. So it's a synthesis of man's age-old aspiration. Individually, people have realized the divine. They become saints, sages, seers and whatnot. But the Vedic aspiration was always ultimately to realize heaven on earth. Well, they were searching for it. Shobindo finds and fulfills it, to put it like that. So it means that there will be several kinds of beings emerging all over who will be connected in whatever way, and it's a evolution of a new species. So the individual and the collective. Then there is the inner and the outer. So mostly people are very happy. Sometimes people, oh, in my dream or in my vision, I had this experience. Shobindo insisted all that is fine, but it doesn't mean anything unless the outer changes. You have, wonderful, you had a dream vision, very good. But the outer consciousness must change. Our speech, our actions, our everyday life must change. The body must change. The most outward things must change. So the inner and outer synthesis of the inner realization and the outer. Otherwise we see there have been yogis, even Vedic times. Dhruvasa Rishi is no small yogi. I mean somebody whose word, even God has to listen. He can curse God and he better, you know, obeys the command. But he is quick to anger despite having realized so much. So the inner and the outer has to come together, tuned completely. So all this is another synthesis. Then, very beautifully, reason and faith. You see, what does religion say? Or even certain yogas, most yoga. No. Reason you apply in here, but actually you have to take it as an article of faith. Which is okay to start with. We understand there is a realm of reason. There is a realm which doesn't belong to reason. It's suprarational. But reason itself can be uplifted to a point. And classic example is Shobindo's The Life Divine. Because if your vision expands, your understanding grows, you begin to see. What is reason? Reason is logical links. You begin to see the same thing, but in very different ways. Your vision changes, your understanding changes, you start with faith, and you create a difference between reason and faith, but a point comes where faith itself leads us to the dynamic aspect of the divine. This is the great reconciliation, which again is missing. Vedanta takes us to the static aspect of the divine. The Purusha. Tantra to Shakti. But Shakti ultimately yields to Purusha. But here there is the synthesis of the passive and the dynamic aspect of the divine. So creation and the creator are reconciled. And then to one more, science and spirituality. Spirituality synthesis of yoga, he starts. Now we have to understand, when Sri Aurobindo speaks of that there is a science in spirituality, he is not talking of what modern tendency is, a material monism. You explain spirituality by material processes, not at all. That is destroying it. But you understand and explain matter scientifically by spiritual processes. For example, he speaks about condensation of the spirit, involution. It's a pure science if you want to look at it. But science looked from the other angle. As the Kena Upanishad says, Yan manasana manute yena hur manomatang tadeva brahmantvam viddhi nedam yadidam upasate. First find that, and then you understand how the mind works. Not that, you know, all that is spiritual is ultimately mental process or, you know, brain energy. Not at all. And then finally, the objective and subjective. This has been a big divide. That there is an objective reality which the senses weave. Scientists say this is real. And then there is a subjective world of thought, feeling, imagination and all kinds of things. Is there any correspondence between them? Because this is one of the big challenges, and people would ask Sri Aurobindo, the action of yoga force, you are talking of yoga force, does it have any result? And he says that one has to be a lotus eating, deluded person if one was not experimenting and seeing. He says thousands and thousands of time, yoga force I have used and seen tangible results. So our thoughts now, see how science itself is drawing closer. Now we speak of thought and feelings having an impact upon the body. What is it? It's drawing closer of the subjective and the objective aspects. Otherwise we had my inner life, world of fantasy, how does it matter? Nobody knows about it. Outwardly I must look nice. That won't do. That is hypocrisy. And that's what she says, one of the things that will happen, that the last thing. Right now one may be very rich, again story of Manigri, but maybe inwardly very hollow. But in the new world, the true world, your outer richness must be commensurate with an inner richness. So Kuber will be Kuber. Why? Use the word Kuber, you know. Because in Pondicherry you have number of Kubere, Kuber, School Street, Kuber. Many people use the word Kuber. I don't know whether it means the same thing. But, well, I don't know. But basically it's about Kuber is the guardian of the outer world, but Lakshmi, you have the inner and outer riches must come together. That will happen automatically, but this is the last thing that will happen. That as we evolve, so that's why the rich-poor divide you try to solve by outer means, it won't work, it will only lead to consciousness becoming more and more cross. But when you evolve inwardly, you will reach a point and then society will be organized like that. That society will evolve in such a way that those, at one point India almost tried the experiment. That based on your inner evolution, the outer riches, that's many stories like that. That the outer riches should come as a commensurate. Whatever you need should come to you. And that's what whole Auroville is about. Whatever you need, you can take and you can get. It's not based on desire, hoarding, accumulation, Amazon.com or Flipkart. It's not based on that. If you need something, you get it. So in the new world, so wonderful it will be, what we need will be provided for us. And though Sri Aurobindo has not said, but I suppose what we don't need or what we misuse may be taken away from us. So it's a word of caution with which we'll stop. Men, countries, continents, the choice is imperative. Truth or the abyss. It is a world of truth which is being created here, not there. And that's why there is so much shifting and much more will happen. Because we had learned to live in falsehood and it be a breathing falsehood. And I'm not going to elaborate on this. Everything, actions, feelings, speech, everything was full of falsehood. So divine is fully at labor to make sure whatever can be transformed, transformable will be transformed. Whatever refuses obstinately will be thrown out of existence. Whatever time it takes and whatever means that are needed to employ, because a new world is born. Jema.